Chapter 55. My son, my son. Son, the Son of God, the Messiah or Christ, the Son of Man, the offspring of the flesh. Mary Baker Eddy. 1887. The Battle of Armageddon raged on, but few were aware of that fact. Though her enemies knew that Mrs. Eddy was a formidable foe, the world saw her as the capable, serene leader of a new movement which was spreading beyond national boundaries. How she needed help in her work, especially men, to carry the weight. In her primary class the previous May, a man named Frank E. Mason had shown much promise. He had since written some fine articles for the journal, and, tried in Mrs. Eddy's pulpit, had done very well. This new disciple had given encouragement to her weary hope, and by fall she had accepted him in her normal class, which began on the 30th of October. To her students, new and old, Mrs. Eddy was the embodiment of strength, but she longed at times for just one to lean upon. Asa Gilbert had been that one for 5 short years. At his death, she had turned to George Glover, hoping he would leave prospecting and drinking to stand by her, but he would not. So she had given up any hope of assistance from her son. The reverse, however, was not the case. In Lead City, Dakota, George began hearing reports of the spread of Christian Science, and his interest in his mother increased correspondingly. The leader of such a movement must be growing very wealthy. George Glover is not the first son who desired to live in affluence at his mother's expense, but he is the first one who ever elected to do so while his mother was fighting the Battle of Armageddon. His letter stating that he wanted to bring his family to Boston to be with her prompted this response. Boston, October 31st. 1887. Dear George, yours received. I am surprised that you think of coming to visit me when I live in a schoolhouse and have no room that I can let even a boarder into. I use the whole of my rooms and am at work in them more or less all the time. Besides this, I have all I can meet without receiving company. I must have quiet in my house, and it will not be pleasant for you in Boston. The Choates are doing all they can by falsehood and public shames, such as advertising a college of her own within a few doors of mine, when she is a disgraceful woman and known to be. I am going to give up my lease when this class is over, and cannot pay your board nor give you a single dollar now. I am alone, and you never would come to me when I called for you, and now I cannot have you come. I want quiet and Christian life alone with God when I can find intervals for a little rest. You are not what I had hoped to find you, and I am changed. The world, the flesh, and evil, I am at war with, and if anyone comes to me, it must be to help me, and not to hinder me in this warfare. If you will stay away from me until I get through with my public labor, then I will send for you, and hope to then have a home to take you to. As it now is, I have none, and you will injure me by coming to Boston at this time more than I have room to state in a letter. I asked you to come to me when my husband died, and I so much needed someone to help me. You refused to come then in my great needs, and I then gave up ever thinking of you in that line. Now I have a clerk who is a pure-minded Christian, and two girls to assist me in the college. These are all I can have under this roof. If you come after getting this letter, I shall feel you have no regard for my interest or feelings, which I hope not to be obliged to feel. Boston is the last place in the world for you or your family. When I retire from business and into private life, then I can receive you, if you are reformed, but not otherwise. I say this to you, not to anyone else. I would not injure you any more than myself. As ever, sincerely, M. B. G. Eddy. Within days of the writing of this letter, a young doctor appeared at the door of the Metaphysical College, who was about George's age, and who embodied the qualities Mary longed to see in her son. George was uneducated, loud, boisterous. Dr. Foster was educated, quiet, refined. Foster, a practicing homeopathic physician in Waterbury, Vermont, had witnessed healings of some of his own patients by Christian Science, and had come to investigate this new teaching. A primary class was to convene on the 7th of November, and Ebenezer J. Foster became the second MD to enroll in that class. Before the class ended, the contrast between Foster and George Glover was repeatedly emphasized. For George, undeterred by his mother's letter, arrived at her door with his wife and family. The letter she had written him said, quote, "If anyone comes to me, it must be to help me, and not to hinder me in this warfare," end quote. A visiting family with three children was no help in the battle, but George's uncouth appearance and behavior, his illiterate complaining wife, and his desire to share in his mother's fame and wealth were a great hindrance. Mrs. Eddy made the best of an untenable situation and took a house in Chelsea for the Glovers. She surprised her church when she appeared on the platform of Chickering Hall with three children and introduced her grandchildren to the congregation. She gave them all the time she could, including Thanksgiving Day. But while her opportunistic son was idling about Boston, Dr. Foster was busily engaged back in Vermont with his newfound knowledge. In his letters to his teacher, he addressed her as Mother, referred to himself as your child, and was genuinely eager to do all he could to assist her in her work. He came much closer to fulfilling the term son than did her own flesh and blood. Who has not longed for human help and love, for the closeness of family? The leader had many more experiences before she added the word son to the glossary of science and health, and defined it, quote, "The Messiah, or Christ," end quote.